Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Monday, March 19th, 2018. With me today, I have Brian Chaffin. And how are you, Brian?
I'm good. Thanks for having me this morning, man. It's good to be here.
It's really great to have you here. I always enjoy it when you're on the show. Seriously.
I don't blame you.
Well, it's because you know you.
Yeah, God, right. Every day I get up and I know me, and I imagine that everybody is pleased to meet me or have me on the shows or whatever.
Sure. My guess is that you look in the mirror and you say things like, gosh, everyone's lucky to know me.
Yeah. Understood. Yeah, like I wish I could be them so I could experience meeting me.
I'll tell you, it's amazing.
So ridiculous.
It is. Speaking of ridiculous, but not ridiculous, John Martellaro, how are you?
Hey, I'm pleased to be here. Happy to be on the show with Brian. Balderdash.
I see John has met me.
Oh, that's awesome. John, you are absolutely fantastic. And while I tell Brian I'm glad he's here, I really am glad you're here.
So there's a competition.
Oh, no. No, not at all.
You're not going to tell each of us who you love best?
No, it's you, John. No. No, I'm not going to tell anyone. It's you, Brian. Hey, we have a sponsor today, and our sponsor is Jamf. And I'm really glad they're our sponsor, and they're clearly very tolerant because they are here. I'm a Jamf user. I will tell you why soon, but first we are going to talk about micro LED. So here's why we're talking about this today. Bloomberg found that Apple has a manufacturing facility in Santa Clara that they hadn't told anyone about. It's just this nondescript gray building. And Apple is producing on a small scale their own micro LED displays. And so the word is that Apple is working on these so that they can eventually bring them to the Apple Watch and then to the iPhone at some point as well. So it looks like Apple is in a position where they've decided that this is one of the things that they want to bring in-house and have control over for their own design.
Well, let me immediately quibble.
Okay.
Apple invents its own manufacturing processes and techniques and methods all the time.
Yes, and then they have other companies manufacturing.
Yeah, actually them. do the thing. So it is... in keeping with that past, this facility that's here in Silicon Valley, I don't know that doesn't necessarily mean that they're bringing manufacturing in house. They could just be furthering their long standing practice of developing their own techniques.
Did I say bringing manufacturing in house?
You said bringing the displays in house.
Okay,
that's what I heard.
Okay, so what I meant was bringing the display design in house. So it's their own, just like their silicon, the A series processors. They design that. They have someone else make it. I think it'll be the same thing with this.
I think what's interesting is that. This is a technology we heard about a year ago or something like that, maybe 2 years ago. And we were wondering, scratching our heads, trying to figure out why Apple was pursuing this technology when OLED appeared to be on the horizon for the watches and the phones.
Well, Apple purchased LuxView in 2014. And mm-hmm. This technology is what LuxView is known for.
My first blush take is that OLEDs are very complicated and expensive to manufacture. And micro LED has the potential in the long run for maybe being easier to manufacture.
Well, based on what we know about micro LED, it's supposed to be brighter than OLED, have higher contrast than OLED, and a longer lifespan while consuming less power when it's in use.
That's not surprising, because OLEDs are not all that bright compared to some other technologies. I remember that from the article now. Yeah.
Yeah, and the article you're referring to is the definitive piece that you wrote on the differences between LED, micro LED, and OLED.
Yeah, back, what, 2016, June?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a fun piece. Thanks for linking to that, by the way. I'd forgotten about that.
Oh, I hadn't. That's why I linked to it. It's a great piece. I'll make sure there's a link to my piece about this factory in today's show notes, as well as a direct link to your piece, John, because it's a really great primer for anyone that wants to understand the differences between these display technologies.
Now, can I play like devil's advocate against my devil's advocate?
Sure.
It is also possible that Apple really wants to bring this stuff in house.
Yeah, and just have their own factory to make displays.
And really, really, I don't think they're going to do that in Santa Clara. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense unless it's automated. But my earlier point was simply to just emphasize that it doesn't mean that they're bringing manufacturing house. But at the same time, it could mean that they're doing that.
Sure. Yes. And while they're diving apparently pretty deep and making a serious investment in micro LED, the big thing for me out of this is that Apple is looking at another part of their manufacturing process and deciding what technology designs they want to bring in-house. And they have decided, we want to control our own display technology. We don't want to rely on Samsung or LG for that technology, regardless of if they're making it in-house or having a manufacturing partner make the displays. This is another part of the process where Apple wants to maintain full control instead of relying on someone else.
I would also imagine that if Apple goes with this sort of technology, that there is probably also a technical reason for it.
One of the technical reasons, I'm sure you're going to love, Brian, thinner.
Thinner, not coming at the expense of battery, is great.
Yeah, well, and battery is a big plus too, because you get thinner and more efficient power usage. So,
right.
So a display that in theory ought to look better and perform better than OLED and use less power.
And it's supposed to have higher contrast.
Yes.
And no supply chain leaks, maybe.
Fewer supply chain leaks.
Fewer maybe. Supply chain leaks. There you go.
Yeah, it depends on where they actually do the manufacturing, of course.
Yeah.
So before we move on to another topic, Apple, where they are in this process right now, it's assumed that they're 3 to 5 years out before they would be using this technology in any product. So, John, since you have followed this well enough that you could write a definitive piece about it, do you think there's any possibility that we will see improvements in LED or OLED that would make Apple's investment now kind of worthless?
No, I don't see any LED, LCD improvements on the horizon that Apple would go back to. I think it's going to be OLED for a few years, and then we'll switch the micro LED. But I don't know of any technologies that would cause OLED to become more favored or to supplant micro LED. With the articles I read said LED, micro LED is the future. So we'll be with OLED phones for a while, as you said.
Okay. And then apparently micro LED.
Yep.
All right. Well, I mentioned earlier that we have a sponsor, and that sponsor is Jamf. And I also said that I'm a Jamf user, and I am. So here's the deal. What Jamf lets you do is essentially be your own IT department device manager. So if you have iPhones, iPads, Macs in your home or in your business, and you want to be able to manage those devices, keep track of everything you have, make sure that you're staying on top of your software updates, keep all of your device settings so that if you have trouble, you can push them back out to a device. And if a device is stolen, you can remotely wipe it and turn it into a brick with Jamf. So you have a lot of control over what you're doing with their system, and it's really easy to use. So the way it works is you sign up for an account, and it's free for up to 3 devices, and then you pick the devices you have that you want to enroll into your Jamf account. So in my case, I have my iPhone, I have my iPad Mini, my 10.5-inch and 12.9-inch iPad Pros, my MacBook Air, and my Touch Bar MacBook Pro, which that's plenty for me to have to manage right there. But then I threw my parents' iPhones, my mom's iPad, my dad's iMac into the mix as well, so that I can stay on top of their devices too. And it's been great because it's as if I'm running devices for a small business, because I can keep track of everything. I know where each device is as far as software updates. If there's a problem, like my dad calls and says, my email stopped working, I don't know what happened, I can go and push his email settings back out to him, because that's probably what happened. His email settings somehow got changed, and now he can check his email again. And it's been great. So wonderfully easy to use. You do everything right from your web browser, and it's simple to set up. So here's what you guys need to do. Head over to the Jamf website. That's jamf.com/TDO, and go to that specific URL so that Jamf knows that you heard about their service here. And that way we share the love. Everyone gets a little hug out of that. So jamf.com/TDO, the first 3 devices that you add to your account, that's free. And there's no strings attached. That's just how it is. Free, no time limits, no feature limits, just free for up to 3 devices. Additional devices cost you $2 a month per device, which is a really great price. So, even if you have 10 devices, 20 devices that you need to manage at $2 per device per month, that's pretty inexpensive. And if you can't afford to have your own on-site IT department, this is a cost-effective way to have someone keeping track of those devices without having to go out and get some sort of degree just to keep track of a bunch of iPhones. So jamf.com/TDO, go check it out. Those first 3 devices are always free, $2 per device after that. And thank you, Jamf, for being our sponsor. Okay, so the other thing that I want to talk about today is this gray box thing that's supposed to be able to hack into iPhones. And so we all know a little bit about this, and if I'm getting any of this wrong, feel free to correct me. The gist of it is that there's this box that this company makes, and it's I think the company's in California, and you plug an iPhone
Atlanta.
Oh, okay, so it's in the United States. Okay, mm-hmm. So you plug a phone into this box, and then it has a way of being able to essentially do a brute force attack on the passcode and then get into and unlock the device. So, of course, they have to have physical control over your device so they can plug it into the gray box. And anytime your iPhone, your iPad, or your Mac is under someone else's physical control, I mean, it totally changes the game as far as security. So, So did I get that right with the way this box is supposed to work?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I mean, there's a lot that we don't know.
Correct.
What's interesting is the estimated time for cracking. Mm-hmm. The article I read said it takes about 2 hours for a 4-digit code. And about 3 days for a 6-digit code. And that's pretty alarming, because if somebody really has the time and patience, just a box it and churn, in 3 days they can break into your phone. And so when I mentioned this in Particle Debris on Friday, I thought, well, boy, it's time to go from 6 digits to 8 digits now. The article doesn't talk about how long it would take for 8 digits to crack, but I'm guessing it would be a month or more. So the upshot is that it seems like the technology war is continuing to escalate. You know, there was a time when Apple's iPhone security became stronger and stronger, and then we had issues starting with the San Bernardino affair, and the government was working harder and harder and breaking into phones, and then it became kind of a fuss in March of 15 with the FBI. Was it 15 or 16?
15.
Yeah. So, and that kind of simmered for a while amidst other political affairs. But what's happening is that it's clear that with these new services that are being developed, and this gray box is just one of the many services that are being offered, that there's an increasing financial and technological investment in breaking into phones. And as Apple keeps upping the ante and countermeasuring this, the frustration of law enforcement is going to increase substantially, because they're going to spend all this money on developing techniques, and then they'll be circumvented again by Apple. And so I expect it to come to a boil at some point, where instead of the argument being Apple's protecting customers' privacy, because of the money spent and the frustration involved, Apple's actively circumventing law enforcement. So I expect I expect it to get more vociferous. So.
Brian, what do you think?
My issue with this particular topic has never been law enforcement getting legal access to devices for which they have warrants or permission of the owners. Right? That's never been my issue. My issue has always been the effect that law enforcement, backdoor law enforcement access has on the rest of us. And with these devices, there are two versions of it, is my understanding. One is a $15,000 box that works on the network that it's set up and then will not work elsewhere. And then the other version is a $30,000 box that pretty much works anywhere. And imagine how much a device like that might be worth to any serious criminal element that is interested in unlocking stolen iPhones so that they can resell them, let alone, of course, accessing the data that's on them for their own potential criminal use.
Oh, yeah.
And it is only a matter of time before these boxes are out in the wild.
Well, people are already claiming they have seen the boxes. So are they out in the wild already?
Well, they could have been seen in police use. Okay. In a police setting. They could have been seen in a legitimate police setting. However, I think Malwarebytes got a hold of one.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, then that counts as they're out in the wild.
Right. And of course, you know, I trust Malwarebytes with something like this. This is, you know, pretty much, this is in the realm of security, but if they can get one, so can someone else. And these kinds of devices put us all at risk. And it infuriates me. Yeah, golly. The whole thing infuriates me.
Yeah. I look at devices like this and I understand the need to be able to do criminal forensic investigation. My concern is that these devices are going to be used in other ways, or that they will be used in some way that abuses the legal process.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mean like with by law enforcement?
By law enforcement, yes.
That is always a risk. surely the vast majority of these of law enforcement uses for these devices will be according to the law. I mean, of course there will be abuse. There is always, there is always abuse. It turns out law enforcement is made up of people.
Just like the rest of the world.
Just like the rest of the world. And people tend to make mistakes or sometimes make the wrong decisions. But, there is recourse for that sort of thing within the system. So that doesn't worry me as the systemic problem. The systemic problem is having these, the responsible thing to do for anyone who found some kind of backdoor that can be, or some kind of flaw that can be leveraged like these devices supposedly can, is to inform the vendor so that it can be patched. Of course, Apple can get one of these things too. If Malwarebytes can get one, Apple can get one. They can figure out how to reverse engineer it and fix the problem.
Right. And just based on Malwarebytes' report, Apple probably has a much better idea of what the box is doing than anyone else, simply because they know how the iPhone works. So my guess...
You say Apple or Malwarebytes?
Well, Apple, because Malwarebytes has issued a report, Apple probably has a pretty good idea of what the box is doing.
Yeah, and Malwarebytes is a responsible player.
Yeah.
In that space. So if we want security from the bad guys, unfortunately, the good guys are going to be faced with impediments. That is reality as we know it today.
Sure. But those impediments also make the good guys safer, because that means that the encryption and other security measures that are in place to protect us as regular citizens, they're also there to protect law enforcement so that the investigations they're doing are less likely to be hampered or ruined by criminal elements. So, we're kind of out of time. So my guess is, as we learn more about this whole gray box thing, we'll end up talking about this again. But in the meantime, I just really hope that these devices don't get used in an abusive way, in an inappropriate way, because that...
Well, they will be. And they probably already have. Again, if Malwarebytes can get one, so can...
Yeah.
So can someone else.
I was just really trying to make myself feel better, and it's not working. Yeah. All right. Well, okay. So then in that case, my big hope is that Apple is so on top of this and we'll get software and hardware updates that make devices like this not work. And
yeah, that make Gray Box 2 or Gray Box 3
a necessity. Yeah, there you go. All right. So we're out of time. Brian, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having us, man.
And John, thank you for being here as well.
Hey, thanks for having me too. See you later.
And thank you to Jamf for being our sponsor today. Head over to their website, jamf.com. That's jamf.com/TDO. Sign up for your free account. That's free for up to 3 of your Apple devices. And then it's only $2 per month per device after that. It's a fantastic service for your business or for your family sanity. So thank you, Jamf, for being our sponsor. Listeners, thank you for being here. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.